This is the Goalkeepers Union podcast.
Hello and welcome to the Goalkeepers Union podcast. Between the Sticks, me, Matt Beadle, here with the ophthalmologic voice of goalkeeping, Richard Lee.
Hello, Matthew. I do not know what that means.
No, and in fact, before I looked it up, I, of course, didn't know what it meant either. I don't actually think ophthalmologic is an actual word, but I've used it. I've converted ophthalmalgia into a descriptive word as ophthalmologic, which means, well, ophthalmalgia, I'll keep saying it, means, or it is the correct medical term for severe eye pain, Richard.
Okay.
Now, I only know a small token of this story, but you were here, as everyone knows, for a period over the past couple of weeks. You fled home on Saturday and everything kind of went downhill for you a bit, didn't it?
It did. Excellent start to the pod, by the way. I feel like we've certainly educated me. You know, I've now learned a new word. What is it they say? You learn something every day. I don't think that's necessarily always true. I think there's a lot of days that go by where I look back on the day and think, I've learned nothing today. But you know what? I will go to bed now and I'll think, I've learned something today. So thank you for that. But yeah, I did have a quite, I was going to say turbulent. And then you go, it's probably a good word, isn't it? Given that I was on a flight.
It is, yeah.
So yeah, I did that without meaning to. But yeah, it was a difficult journey home. And just to backtrack, so I did come back to England for the week. Great week, by the way. So many games. Went to Oxford Reading on Tuesday. Went to QPR Plymouth on the Wednesday. Went to Chelsea on the Saturday. Then I shot straight off to Heathrow to get my flight home. And I'll be honest, a week back in England, very little sleep, lots of games, lots of meetings. Didn't feel great, was quite bunged up. Now, the majority of the flight was okay, got a little bit of sleep. It was the overnight flight, which is never great, really. But it was when we started to land, suddenly the pain that I had in my face, I think it was my sinuses, it started off in my tooth, then it was kind of like moving around my face. Then it went into my eyeball, and I was like, this is really weird, like a really sharp pain in my eye. And I, at one moment, I was like, I think my eye's going to explode. That was what was going through my head. So I did have to call the stewardess. I was like, I don't know if there's anything you could do to help me, but I think my eye's going to explode. She looked at me a bit funny. She was like, what do you mean? I was like, it's so painful. I don't know what's happening. And she said, wait there. And she went away. She came back and I thought she'd have some like magic pill. She gave me chewing gum. It was fruity, really fruity chewing gum. She was like, just chew. It'll be your sinuses, da, da, da. But to be honest, it was horrible the whole way down. And even for a few hours after that, it didn't really settle down. And then thankfully, it did, but I think it was just purely the fact I was so bunged up and the sinuses were playing up. It was the least enjoyable landing I've ever had.
You need some Vit C in you, Richard. That's what you need.
I have had a couple of days of recovery now. You probably hear I feel a lot more sprightly today. It's a good job we're doing this today and not yesterday, because this could have been a very, very lackluster podcast.
Did the chewing gum help, by the way?
Well, do you know what it is? I know a lot of people suffer from this. Here we go. We often give goalkeeping advice, but now we're going to give advice on how best to land. You know, I know a lot of people get that funny pain in the ear. I used to always get that. You know, and my ears would start to pop and like really sharp pain in the ear. And they'd always say, like, open your mouth as wide as you can. So you look like an idiot, but then you can start to hear it kind of popping a bit and the pain starts to ease, or the pressure starts to ease a little bit, and blowing your nose as well, or holding your nose, et cetera, et cetera. So I was doing, I mean, if someone could have had a camera on me for like the half hour that we were landing, I've pulled more facials in that half an hour than I think I have in the last year. But it did help a bit, because the chewing action again just kind of got things moving a bit. I was massaging every area of my face for about half an hour. It was a really, really tough time.
I would have loved to have seen that, definitely, for sure. We haven't done this in recent weeks, actually. Let's bring this back to goalkeeping. How can you relate your experience to goalkeeping?
How can you relate? I guess this is more of like a life one, but of course, you know, you've had a bit of a tough time. When you're really in the thick of it, it's then finding solutions. I've had a bad couple of games. You've got another game coming up. How do you get your mindset into the place where you're still approaching that game with the amount of confidence that you need and in the right mindset, not chasing the game, allowing it to come to, just knowing that this too shall pass.
Excellent. Richard, on with the show.
Let's do it.
Starting in the Premier League at the Etihad, Man City 2, Crystal Palace 2. We've had a tweet in from Luke Tyrrell, who says, looking forward to hearing the analysis of this excellent performance on the Goalkeepers Union podcast this week. And that excellent performance was from Dean Henderson, who loved every minute, as he said, of his Premier League debut for Palace. So it was his first league appearance since January. 7 saves in the game. The pick of the bunch, I think, from Julian Alvarez and Bernardo Silva. There was a spot of cramp in there too for Hendo.
Yeah, well, do you know what? Like, look, this was a great game regardless, but even more so when you step in, having not played for so long, obviously had his injury, bits and pieces. Like we always say about goalkeepers that step in, it can take a bit of time to really get up to speed with the pace of the game. Certainly the Premier League, you know, stepping in first game for ages in the Premier League against Man City, it doesn't get any tougher than that. And I thought he was excellent, just really, really good throughout. Like you said, a couple of fantastic saves. And him getting cramp, I know they made a bit of a joke on it in the post-match coverage, but of course he hasn't played for a long, long time. Also add into that, a lot of the time, as much as cramp can be fatigue, it can also come from nervous energy. You know, he won't have played for so long. And again, this experience would have been, of course, a massive experience for him. So you often see that players get cramped. So it's nothing to do with lack of fitness or anything like that. It'll be a build-up of all these different things. And the fact that he did have to explode full stretch, putting so much through the muscles in order to make the save. But as you say, a couple of brilliant saves. I thought the first one in particular, down low to his right, excellent movement. It's one of them, ball crossed in, and he's got himself back into the perfect position and the speed and agility to get down to his right and get it around the post. Again, you couldn't see any rustiness whatsoever.
I really like Dean Henderson, and it's great to see him back. However, when watching that game, I realised that I don't like the Palace 1-2 situation. I don't like it. I don't like the fact that they have, and this is purely coming from a homegrown perspective, I don't like the fact that they have two English goalkeepers who are effectively number ones, because now Dean Henderson is fit, Sam Johnston is out. You'd imagine if Henderson continues the form that he showed at the Etihad, he will keep that number one spot, whereas Sam Johnston had come into the side, obviously been the outright number one, had to bide his time after Vicente Guaita had held that jersey for a long time. And now he's going to be, you'd imagine, you don't know for sure, but you'd imagine that he might, when he returns to fitness, start off as the number two and have to regain that spot again. I just don't like the fact that one of them is going to miss out.
Yeah, and you know what? I would agree. I think that, look, we spoke far too much on this podcast about the Rhea Ramsdale situation. This is similar. It won't get anywhere near as much publicity because it's Crystal Palace and not Arsenal, rightly or wrongly. But it's similar. Look, on one hand, credit to the Palace recruitment team for bringing in two excellent goalkeepers. Well, three if you include Remy Matthews as well. To have a 1-2-3 of that calibre, big credit to them. On the other hand, it goes back to that goalkeeping dynamic. Now, to this point, it's not been an issue because Dean Henderson got injured. So if anything, having your two number ones, excellent. And now Sam Johnson's injured. I guess the argument could be, well, look, you've had two goalkeepers that can perform at a very similar level. But as you say, there will be a point very soon, probably not too far at all, because I don't think it's a serious injury for Sam Johnson, where both of them are fit. And then it'll be, once we get like the first few weeks, whatever happens, happens. But it'll be, again, get into February, March, April. If it then does settle down as to whoever is the one, whoever is the two, you can't help but feel that come the end of the season, it might be a case that they're having to do a change, potentially, more for the fact that the two will not be happy being the two. So, yeah, to this point, it's been fine. But I think, like you say, it will be an intriguing few weeks ahead. Kind of comes back to, I always remember the situation that Burnley had back in the day when they had Hart, Pope and Heaton, you know, which was always, yeah, really curious to see from the outside. We've got three goalkeepers that are in and around the England squad all at the same team. It's quite unusual that you see that, but certainly we've got that situation at Palace now.
The City Ground, Nottingham Forest, 0, Tottenham Hotspur 2. Matt Turner for Forest, keeping his place. He did do some good things in the game, I thought. Quite solid aerially. Again, good save low from Dejan Kulusevski. Another good save, I think, from Brennan Johnson in the first half. However, also conceded from Kulusevski after handing him possession in the second half.
Yeah, do you know what? I felt for him. I thought he was excellent in the game. As you say, a couple of saves he made. The one down to his right in particular, it was a shot that was an unexpected shot. You could see he was nowhere near being set, but the speed at which he was able to get himself across. We talk about that a lot in goalkeeping, that as much as you can train for all situations, sometimes things will catch you off guard, and then it's being able to create a save, which I thought he did here. Moved brilliantly across to his right, covered the full goal, good hand to put it wide. But yeah, the goal, of course, he'll be really frustrated with it. It's one of them. The back pass has done him no favours, fired into him. His touch was okay, but maybe not quite where he wanted it to be, which kind of kept it under his feet just a touch. From that position, I actually think he did the right thing, which was just try and get as much distance as he can and try and keep it wide. Of course, Sod's Law, it goes straight to their winger. I do wonder whether then he still had in his mind a little bit the fact that it gone straight to him. Again, I'm speaking more from a personal perspective here, in that when you do give a, you know, give the ball away from that, there is part of you that's just thinking, oh, really hope this doesn't end up in anything, you know. And obviously he's then cutting on the angle, and then even then, without making excuses for him, the strike, if you actually watch it really carefully, it's moved a tiny, tiny bit. Now, I'm sure outfield players listening in will be like, you know, as they usually are, yeah, classic goalkeepers, sticking up for the goalkeepers. It has moved just a tiny bit, and that tiny bit was the reason that it's hit his hand and gone back in the goal. But he was also ever so slightly too low on his set. So there was a couple of things with this. But of course, when they all compound and you've got the pass and isn't able to make the save, you could see straight away, and he is quite a, I wouldn't say he's an emotional goalkeeper, but you can certainly read on his face in terms of how he's feeling, thinking, and you could see straight away he was so angry with himself or so frustrated with the situation, because this is a save that he makes 99 times out of 100.
You have to factor in the press as well, I think, there from Spurs and Heung-min Son, because Matt Turner distributed to Kulusevski in the way that he did. But I think a combination of the pass back, the touch, and then the press, which you have to give credit to Spurs for, which resulted in Turner doing what he did.
Yeah, I think the other bit as well was you could see, even with the pass back, and obviously see throughout the game, it was a really slick pitch. You know, obviously there was that little bit of rain, which again, sounds like it's making excuses for goalkeepers. But having been there, knowing what these balls are like, because he's never going to be able to say, not that he'd ever try to hold that initial shot that comes in. So of course it has to be a parry. Then there's also going through your mind, all in a split second, parry into a good area. And you can see he's got both hands up and he is looking to parry as far as he can. They're quite firm hands that he's got, which I think again is the right technique here. And we're talking millimetres, and that's, again, the difference in goalkeeping sometimes. It can just be millimetres, and unfortunately, it's very costly.
At the other end, Guglielmo Vicario, seems like we speak about good saves from him every week at the moment. Really good stops from Anthony Elanga and Harry Toffolo. And also, I think when you're lucks in when things are going for you. There was the effort from Neco Williams late on that's hit the post. It's cannoned off his body, almost rolled up his body, and then out again to safety.
Yeah, no, again, on the whole, very good performance. Thought he stood up very well for the one that he, I say, put over the bar, more out to the side. Had an interesting moment on one that he's kind of come and patted out back into danger, which, and again, I always try and look at it from a goalkeeper's perspective. I think, again, where he is, we talk about this tightly called spring, ready to explode at all times. He is very much that. And it kind of felt a little bit like that here, where he'd already made his decision before the actual moment had come. So the ball was there. He's probably thinking, this might be a 50-50. Just get something on it, get it back into play. And of course, when there is no pressure, it then looks a little bit funny, because the ball's there, he could hold it, and he's just parried it back into play. And thankfully for him and for Spurs, they were able to get it clear. But that one didn't look great. And I do just think that's a case of, and again, goalkeepers listening in, we've all been there, we've almost made the decision that little bit too early. Made a very good save with his feet, point blank. Just got himself into a good position. I did wonder when the cross came in, my initial thought is, can you come for it? You then see the replay. And in fairness to Notts Forest, you know, they really have crowded him and penned him in. So there isn't really much chance of coming for the initial cross. But what he does well is he breaks free, gets himself into a really good position, which allows him to make the save with his feet.
Over to Turf Moor, Burnley 0, Everton 2. And analysis, Richard, of the analysis. Shea Given on Match of the Day. His first ever appearance, I believe, on Match of the Day. Running the rule on James Trafford's performance.
Really good. No, do you know what? We've been calling for this for so long. And again, hopefully it is the first of many. But I think the fact that, you know, he did break it down in the way that he did, because I listened to a lot of the live commentary and you get a lot of the general stuff. Oh, we'd be disappointed with that. It's in the 6-yard box. Really should be doing better. Look, and I'm not saying that they're incorrect, but again, break it down as to why. And I think what Shea Given did, made just a couple of key points. Look, yeah, James Trafford on the whole, some great saves again. You know, it certainly could have been a lot more than two if it wasn't for him, and it was a top performance. This one moment, I've got no doubt he'd look at, and like we all do, you'd look to analyse what can you do that bit better. And that's what Shea Given effectively did, and, you know, slowed things down. You could see that when the cross comes in, just taking a slight step forward, which means that he's having to backpedal to make the catch. I think jumping off 2 feet wasn't necessarily the wrong thing here, because it is under the bar, it's on your head, you're not going to be able to maybe get that 1-foot takeoff. And then it is a case of, right, how high can you meet the ball? Wasn't quite able to meet it at its highest point. The argument that Shea Given made as to whether he could have gone with one hand, and then they did pick out a positive example in the second hand when he's done exactly that. You know, I think that's a good point. But again, these are all small details. Like, it wasn't a terrible mistake. Ultimately, when you actually look at it, there was three players surrounding him by the time he headed the ball in. You know, the ball's whipped under the crossbar. You know what Sean Dyche's teams are going to do. And yet they haven't blocked any of the runners. And I'd ask, you know, any goalkeeper in that situation to do that a bit better. And I think most would struggle, where you've got three players that are all 6'4", crowding you, getting a run on you, being able to jump that bit higher. It's such a difficult thing to deal with on a wet, windy night at Turf Moor. I've been there a couple of times myself, and it's, yeah, really, really difficult. So, but I like the way that Shea Given did break it down and said, look, next time that might be one where you don't take that step forward. Ideally, meet it ever so slightly higher. And if you can just get one hand to it and help it on, that's a preferable technique in that situation. And essentially, that's what he said. And he broke down the moment. It wasn't a case of, oh, he should do better, poor goalkeeping, blah, blah, blah. No, he's looked at it very logically and broke it down.
The other thing here is the reaction from the presenter and the pundits every time there is a goalkeeper on the panel, and every time a goalkeeper gives niche goalkeeping analysis, the reaction is always the same. Oh, okay. Yeah, interesting. I hadn't thought of that every single time.
I know. And this is exactly why, look, we'll keep calling for it. Look, if it's to be Shea Given, I think he'd be brilliant. If he's the one that steps up and can be that role on BBC or Sky or whatever it may be, because what you'll often get, and we speak about it all the time, is when there isn't a goalkeeper there, they all like gang up together. And if anything, the mistake gets worse and worse and worse by the time they've finished analysing it, where all it needs is one voice of reason and education to be like, no, this is what it is. And then what can they say? They can't argue because they don't know.
There was a classic bit of Jordan Pickford in this game too. The save from Zeki Amdouni. Just one of those saves, one of those types of saves, the technique, the way he's pulled it off. You feel like you don't really get that from another goalkeeper. That is Jordan Pickford.
Yeah, it was. I mean, look, brilliant, brilliant save. Top corner, top hand. It was just the way that he made the save and almost did a somersault. You know, it was very, very strange how he landed. But again, probably going back to what I said earlier in the podcast, that sometimes you have to manufacture a save. You have to be creative. And I think in this situation, that's exactly that. When you actually break the save down, you look at his set position, you look at his spring, his body position when he makes the save, it's all bang on. Very, very good. Good area that he parries into. But he finds himself in an unusual position in the air. And again, this is just how explosive he is. That will happen for someone like a Jordan Pickford. And it's just the way that he hits the ground. It is very, very unusual. But look, doesn't take anything away from the save.
That is, I think, in his eighth season of Premier League football, that is the first time that Jordan Pickford has racked up four consecutive Premier League clean sheets.
Yeah, is that right? Well, do you know, that doesn't surprise me massively when you consider that, you know, he has been in a struggling Everton team for quite some time, and look, they're looking really good now. And again, got to give huge credit to my ex-teammate, Sean Dyche. You know, look, he has got a way of organising teams. They're always so tough to break down, and it shows you that even now, you get a lot of those basics right. You can create that tough team to play against and get the kind of results they're getting. And I think that certainly Jordan Pickford is relishing it.
Just very quickly as well, just before we move on Jordan Pickford, this was as a result of me looking back over that clean sheet record. It's one of those which I think you kind of knew, but you forgot about, really. So obviously his pathway was such that he went up the leagues, Darlington, Burton, Carlisle, Bradford, Preston, etc. He'd obviously started his career at Sunderland. That was where he was at youth. But he only played that one season, one full season for Sunderland in the Premier League before moving on to Everton. And then in his first season at Everton, he's going to the World Cup as England's number one at the age of, what, 22, 23. So only one season in the Premier League at Sunderland before he bagged that, what, £25 million, £30 million move to Everton. But I think I'd just not realised or forgotten that he had that, just that one season at Sunderland.
Yeah, and you forget how young he was as well. Like, again, there's not, you know, one size fits all when it comes to goalkeeping, but you look at a lot of the top goalkeepers that are playing now in the Premier League, and there are so many similar stories where they really cut their teeth lower down and excel at every level they play at. You know, mentally, they step into the situation and they find a way to deal with it and they keep climbing. And, you know, he did it so quickly. And I think you've got to give anyone huge credit that's able to keep up that level of performance. And of course, all goalkeepers have tough times and go through dips and whatever else, but he's still doing it week in, week out at a top, top level. So many seasons in the Premier League now. Yeah, got to give him huge credit.
And just to wrap up the rest of the Premier League, speaking of analysis, so Daniel Sturridge, enjoying him at the moment, I think pretty balanced when it comes to goalkeepers, as he was for West Ham's and Mo Kudus's opener against Dan Bentley and Wolves in the 3-0 win for West Ham at the weekend. Bentley also in for Jose Sarr, who's out injured at the moment. And Lucas Fabianski also keeping his spot. Areola has been on the bench for the last couple.
Yeah, no, do you know what? I was actually going to say that about Sturridge. I was really pleased because actually during the commentary itself, Alan Smith, who isn't one of my favourites, I'm happy to say that. Like, well, certainly when it comes to goalkeeping, I just, some of the things he says, and he was, again, similar things during this game. Like, I think he kind of broke down towards half time, you know, like breaking down the two goals. I think it's fair to say the first one is the goalkeeper's fault, and the second one is such and such's fault. And it's like, wow, do you know what? They've just done a counter attack from the corner, XYZ's happened, and then you haven't actually been able to understand what the goalkeeper's done in that situation, which ultimately, for those that haven't seen it, it was the guy's cut in from the right-hand side, shot with his left foot back towards the near side, and it's gone in the corner. Now, if you're a goalkeeper, when you're coming across like that and you've got a defender who's tracking him, they should effectively cover that near side. So you're not taking up a true position. You're taking up a position based on the fact that the couple of yards to your left, or certainly the left-hand post, should be covered. So, of course, you're taking up a slightly unusual position because, again, it's all based on percentages. Now, if he whips it far side, Dan Bentley has that covered. If he whips it back on the near side, the defender should block that. That's what their job is when you're coming in and you're trying to make the block. Now, of course, you know, sometimes it's the way it's gone through the defender's legs and it's tucked into that near side. But because of the position Dan Bentley's taken up correctly, he's not able to get there. There's no fault on the goalkeeper here whatsoever. But of course, Alan Smith, and it was very basic commentary, looked at it that way. Whereas in fairness, Daniel Sturridge and even Roy Keane, actually, they were, that, you know, for them, nothing the goalkeeper could do. It's excellent play, excellent strike through the legs. And as you say, I think Daniel Sturridge, I really hope he is here to stay, because I think he's been excellent in terms of his analysis so far. Very level-headed. Doesn't seem like he's there to make a name for himself almost, which I quite like. He is just giving good punditry, not making outrageous comments. So yeah, I hope for that reason he doesn't get sacked, because I'm really enjoying it so far.
Also in was Bart Verbruggen for Brighton, retaining his Premier League spot. Jason Steele had been in for the midweek Europa League win over Marseille. And I was surprised about this one, not because Steele had been in for the game with Marseille, because we've seen what Roberto De Zerbi is doing this season, but because Steele was in last season, if you remember, and we spoke about it on the podcast at length, when Brighton went to the Emirates and beat Arsenal 3-0, and he put in a very decent performance playing out from the back at the Emirates. So I was quite surprised that they opted for Verbruggen this season, just based on what Steele had done against Arsenal last season. And you, as you mentioned at the top there, Richard, were at Chelsea at the weekend. So interested to hear your thoughts on Georgi Petrovic, who's currently got the number one spot there.
Yeah, we'll start with Petrovic. Look, I thought he was good in a game, or very good in a game that probably you or I could have played and kept a clean sheet, in truth. You know, really rarely tested. Did make one good save down to his left, moved across well, good spring, parried into a good area. Played out well all day, but not once did they really put him under pressure. So I don't think he had to play long once from memory. But no, I really like the look of him, the feel of him. Again, you know, talk a lot about body language, but he looks very confident, moves well, but it's very, very hard to tell much from that game. It was effectively the perfect game to make your full Premier League debut, I'd say. I'm sure he's going to have some bigger tests to come. Of course, Rob Sanchez sounds like he'll be out for a few weeks, so we'll certainly get an opportunity to see more of him. But no, certainly a very positive first impression without being able to see too much. Wes Fodringham, I felt a bit for Wes in the, you know, no chance on the first goal. Certainly the second one's one of those frustrating ones where I spoke earlier about Vicario almost making a decision maybe that touch too early, because the ball's broke and you could see that he was expecting it to be either a shot or a 50-50 or what have you. So he's gone with one hand, then suddenly there's a parting of the ways and the ball is there then to hold. But at that point, he's already made the decision, the movement towards it, can't get two hands to it. Then he's got that really frustrating moment where the ball's on the ground and again, he just can't quite get there. And then even in the third instance, when it does break to the player, tries to then cover the goal and it's just snuck under him to make it an easy tap in at the far post. So I did feel for him on that goal. Again, one that doesn't look great, but you can kind of understand why he's done what he's done. And in terms of Brighton, I think you make a great point. I wonder whether that was even considered before the game. I think that the impression I get is they have got a plan for the goalkeepers and they are sticking to that plan regardless. Whereas, like you say, those are the bits that I guess, you know, data can't look at or what have you, where, you know, if a player's playing against his ex-club, it might be one that you put the player in because you know they're going to be that bit more fired up. And that's a human aspect. And I suppose I get the impression with the way that they're operating, it is very much with a clear plan in mind as to what they're going to do, regardless of that type of thing.
And finally, actually, firstly, how were the prawns at Chelsea? Nice hospitality.
Do you know what? I didn't actually get the prawn treatment in the end. And also, in fact, this touched on last week's pod. And Asmir, if you are listening in, firstly, massive thank you for the tickets, the game against QPR. But that certainly wasn't prawn sandwich treatment either. However, the game at Oxford, Reading Oxford, very much was. Lovely little place beforehand. Great spread. I was actually late, a little bit late for the kickoff because I was really enjoying the food there. So, yeah, big thank you to Reading. A big thank you to Asmir, but... You know, if next time you could just kind of bump me up a little bit, that would be...
No. Do you know what? I'm glad it wasn't prawns because I also have had the privilege of being very lucky to have gone to QPR on behalf of Mr. Bigovic. And if you had been upgraded to prawns, we would have had issues, Asmir and I. We would have had big issues.
No, it was very enjoyable. And the Chelsea game, very enjoyable. But yeah, unfortunately, not the prawn sandwich treatment. Hopefully next time.
Which is not what we want. That's not proper football, is it? What was proper football... was at the Brentford Community Stadium. Brentford 1, Aston Villa 2. Wowzers. What on earth was going on here? Firstly, we'll focus purely on the goalkeeping. Emi Martinez, again, we'll mention him. Reading efforts from Mikael Damsgaard and Yoann Wissa. But let's forget about that. Let's talk about, first, the back pass from Leon Bailey. What on earth were you doing? And then the ensuing theatre between Martinez and Neil Mopay. Just absolute bonkers madness.
Well, the pass back amused me for the fact that it was like he had to take on a couple of players to get himself in a position to fire it back towards goal. Like, the amount of effort he's gone to actually, and it was, he's credit to Martin, he's done brilliantly to actually get a toe to it, to get it wide of the post, from what I could see. But yeah, then what happened after? The thing is, I don't really know what Maupay's doing. Like, Martinez hasn't moved. He's got up. He's obviously not happy about the back pass. And then Maupay does just run into him. So, yeah, I thought that was... So then, of course, look, Martinez being Martinez. I don't mind this. Again, rightly or wrongly, it's that kind of one. If someone's kind of done something to you, naturally, there is a little bit in your mind that, all right, do I just take this and just accept it? And that's the right thing to do.
Yes, you do. That. You just take it and accept it.
Do you?
Yes, because that's what a grown man, a grown adult should do. Just
sure.
Take it.
Like, I'm not sure.
Yeah, I face mean, up to him. Go, what are you doing, you idiot? What on earth are you doing? Even call out to the referee and go, did you just see what he just did?
Yeah, I don't know. Okay, so the bully in the playground who's like bullying you every day, you don't do anything back, no?
Yeah, I would do something back, but I wouldn't fall on the floor and roll around and give him the satisfaction of the fact that he's just kind of nicked me in the stomach.
Okay, yeah, fine. I would have loved it if like Martin at that point had just tensed up and would have seen like, yeah, if we'd have seen Mopay hit the ground, that exactly. Would have been really enjoyable. That would have been enjoyable. Okay, so that's the A1 scenario. The second is, all right, you've been an idiot. Right, I'm going to be an idiot back.
Right, okay, fine. We fight the fire with fire, do we, in that way. Good to know where your mindset's at, Richard. If we ever argue, I know what to expect.
Do you know what I did enjoy? Obviously, they then did the analysis after. I think it was Ian Wright, and it was quite funny. But that moment where he's kind of... And in fairness, he has literally pushed Mopay with one finger. And of course, Mopay then goes down. And then he tries to pick him up with his shirt. And then Mopay's got like his shirt over his head. It was theatre. It was complete nonsense. But yeah, I suppose maybe I'm a little bit blinded by the fact that I just really like Emi Martinez. It's one of those things, you know, when someone can just do no wrong. Maybe it is a little bit of that. Maybe I need to look at myself.
Yeah, I think so. We should mention here too that on the bench, we'll give him a mention, was Sam Proctor, the 16-year-old goalkeeper at Aston Villa. So there you go, Sam. That's what professional goalkeeping is all about. Learn from the best.
Yeah, no, a big one. I mean, to be on the bench at 16, by the way. Yeah, fantastic for him.
It is the EFL overview, and starting in the Championship, where there was a threefold contest for performance of the weekend. So Ben Hamer with a savage of a showing at Deepdale, under siege from the off in this one, with six saves inside the opening 25 minutes. There were nine in total, including a claw out from Jordan Storey's header, a double save and point blanker from Brad Potts, the two-handed palm over from Liam Miller, and the full stretch stoppage time free kick from Robbie Brady. It ended incredibly 5-1. To Watford. Jack Bonham named man of the match in Stoke's draw with West Brom. Excellent saves from Jeremy Sarmiento, Brandon Thomas Asante and Pipa to stake his claim as the rightful number one for the Potters over to the new managerial incumbent to make that call, whomever that may be. And Max O'Leary, earning Liam Manning a big second win as Bristol City boss, dives to his left to deny headers and what appeared to be certain goals for Sunderland's Luke O'Neill and Jobe Bellingham. Over at Southampton, Carlos Alcaraz, yes, the Saints beat Blackburn 4-0, and yes, he did score the final goal. However, he tried a Panenka, and he fluffed it. And for that, he will always be chuckled at on here. But not chuckling at all was Swansea loanee Carl Rushworth, who chose to pick up a back pass slash interception from Harry Darling. Middlesbrough's Samuel Silvera converted the subsequent free kick, despite there being nine bodies on the goal line. Incredible how that one kept in. And incredibly unlucky to concede the spawniest goal of this week was Lee Nichols of Huddersfield, saving once from Murray Wallace and his ball in. He saved again from Brooke Norton Cuffey's rebound, then again from Brooke Norton Cuffey's second rebound, and then again from Brooke Norton Cuffey, only for the ball to be horribly bundled over the line.
Okay, where do we start? I think, look, got to start with Ben Hamer, as you mentioned. Just, yeah, phenomenal. The save top left, you know what? And it wasn't the same, but I'm going to mention it. And I haven't mentioned Peter Schmeichel for quite some time. So I'm going to mention it. You remember the save against Newcastle, full stretch to his left, the one that you've seen so many pictures of, where it's almost in, he's behind the post and he's clawing it out. Honestly, just a brilliant, brilliant save from Ben Hamer. It's a header going in the top corner, how he's got back on himself and got a big enough hand without it going over the line to get it around the post. Just brilliant. As you say, the amount of saves thereafter, save with his knee, obviously the point blank save as well, very good. The one that was top right, I've written down on my notes, for me that was just a textbook save. Like, that's one I hope they have taken a picture, because I just felt like his shape and everything was perfect. And I love the fact, I mean, how it doesn't get much better that then free kick, last minute, going in the corner, you get across, full stretch, parry it wide, and it's almost as he's parrying it, you hear the full-time whistle, and naturally everybody just comes over to you. Like, that is as perfect of a performance that you could possibly dream for. So a big well done to him, because he stepped in for Backman, and you know, Watford have had a fantastic time, so long may it continue for him. Jack Bonham, I thought, was excellent. That was, for me, the save of the weekend, his save to the left. That, how he's got across to that and got a hand to it. And you could see it actually hurt him in making the save, which I wasn't surprised at, because he was so fully extended to then make that save and land. Naturally, you're going to feel your shoulder and pretty much your whole body in doing that. But just the amount of power, because that is going right in the corner. I don't see many goalkeepers making this save. As you say, a couple of good saves thereafter. Max O'Leary, very, very good. Certainly the one full stretch down to his left to scamper across and to get something on that. That looked like a goal the whole way. Really quick across his line. And I felt for Carl Rushworth. I did, because I've watched this a few times, and it's a real, I don't know, it's a fine line, isn't it? If it's a back pass or if it's a tackle or an interception that's then come back to you, and you've got that split second where what do you do? And naturally you're under a little bit of pressure anyway. So I guess the decision to pick up does make a bit of sense, because if it wasn't to be that, it would have just been kicking it out wide for a throw on. It's easier in hindsight, knowing that the referee made the decision he did, that maybe that would have made more sense just to clear it. But obviously you're under pressure in that moment. You think it's an interception, you pick it up. And even then, I just felt it wasn't particularly good. It's not something that teams often practice, as that free kick from 2-3 yards out. But you'd like to think with that many bodies, they really shouldn't score from there if it's done correctly and the team, once they've taken the touch, if the team approach the ball correctly. But of course, everybody's just split. They all run towards it, all jump, turn their backs, etc., etc. You look at the point of impact, they're actually not covering that much of the goal. And of course, it's whipped into the near post. So certainly no chance with that.
Nice one. It was Spurs, by the way, not Newcastle, just to correct you on that one.
What was that in regards to? Oh, the head.
The Peter Schmeichel save.
He did make a couple of similar ones against Newcastle, but you're right. I think it may well have been the Spurs one. Okay.
Yeah. Hybrid memory, I think, you've got there. Which is fine. That's absolutely fine. On to League One, where there was one good and one not so good. Jay Lynch firstly with, I think, the save of the week for me. Not just a contender, he's going straight in. Fleetwood losing at home to Peterborough, but Ricky J. Jones denied in the second half with a flying across his line Lynch. An excellent save, that one. And Thomas Holy, a bit unfortunate with a deflection that saw a Sean McWilliams effort crawl over the line and hit the post. Have Holy scrambling back, hitting the post again, trying to crawl it back from the line, not quite getting the ball in his grasp. Just one of those horrible goals to watch. It ended 2-2 between Carlisle and Northampton.
Yeah, we'll start with Thomas Holy. Again, I know we touched on him last week from memory, and it's a tough one again, and I hate saying this, but it's just that bit of mobility. It was a tricky one low that he should gather it. Wasn't quite able to. Then it's the speed at which you can get up and get back and still stop it crossing the line. And it was, yeah, just a real tough one for him to be able to. And again, I suppose this is the pros and cons of being that big. You know, look, of course, when you're, what was he, 6'8", 6'9", there's a lot of positives to that. You know, don't get me wrong. And certainly cross-collecting or one-on-ones or whatever it might be. But these are the kind of moments when it is going to be that little bit tougher. You know, you're not going to have the mobility of someone that's got that 6'1", for instance. It is just the way it is. So I did feel for him on this one. But as you say, in terms of Jay Lynch, what a save this is. And it was out of this and the Jack Bonham save for me. And yeah, maybe I'm being a bit harsh giving it to Jack. It was brilliant. You know, full stretch to his left, the power, flexibility, the agility to get across to his left, get a big hand, brilliant.
And finally in League Two, James Belshaw back at Harrogate for a second debut. He's in on an emergency loan from Bristol Rovers, a 3-1 win over his boyhood club in Notts County. Alex Bass alive and alert-ish, I'd say, in saving Conor McElhaney's free kick in Wimbledon's draw with Salford. Jackson Smith, we'll mention him again because Walsall are unbeaten in all competitions since he stepped in for Owen Evans. That's 3 clean sheets in 4 games. A busy man again in a 1-0 defeat of Tranmere. Evans back, but on the bench. And a tough afternoon for Sutton Loney Dean Boutsanis. 8 shipped at Stockport, the 4th from keeper to keeper, and then sadly in the back of the Sutton net.
Yeah, we'll start with that one. And yeah, felt for him. I mean, they really are struggling at the moment, Sutton. And from what I've seen, he's been very consistent since he stepped in there. And this for me probably epitomised it, in that it can be tempting as a goalkeeper to almost want to do too much when you're in a team like that, that you really are struggling and maybe taking on a bit too much. And actually the decision's not a bad decision here, but he's, you know, trying to be proactive, front-footed, reading the game, and of course gets to the ball. And then it's one of them, once you lose it and you're in midfield, you're kind of hoping that your defence would help you out. And even that, I kind of felt like the lad on the line could have done a little bit better. You know, it was a bit lacklustre as it's gone through him. So a tough day for him, tough day for them. Yeah, they're going to need a big January window, you feel, if they're going to get themselves out of trouble. And a couple of the other saves you mentioned, yeah, big well done to Jackson Smith and Alex Bass. It was quite an interesting save, this, in that what I quite liked about it is sometimes, you know, it's hit with pace. They're not that far out. I think it might have even taken a bit of a nick. He can't get his hands up, and he has literally just stood there and just let it hit him. And I quite like that. You just tense your body up, hits him in the chest. He actually manages to parry it into a decent area, despite the fact that, you know, he wasn't able to get his hands to it. So yeah, certainly credit for the save. Clean Sheet Club. Okay, so unfortunately I do have my other phone with me this week, so that's meant that Matt has sent me the details for Clean Sheet Club. Here we go. And we start in the Premier League. Jordi Petrovic, welcome to the club. Martin Dubravka, a welcome return to the club. Jordan Pickford, entering new territory. David Raya, back on the board. Lucas Fabianski, account open for 23-24. Alisson, cleaning up. Andre Onana, every single game. And into the Championship. Max O'Leary, bath bomb. Ryan Alsop, devil in the distribution. Gavin Batsunu, fruitful. Into League One. Nicholas Bilakapic, challenging. James Beadle, game for a laugh. Will Norris, one more for a siren. And into League Two. Adam Smith, tally doubled. Harry Lewis, hat-trick. Craig McGillivray, perfect. Alex Cairns, goalless galore. Alex Bass, back-to-back. Ben Hinchcliffe, enjoying his Indian summer. Jackson Smith, finding his feet.
It's like you've never been away, Richard. See?
You made
not a problem. Very well read. even if you are out of breath yet again.
I know, I'd have to walk upstairs. This is, yeah, worrying signs. I'm really out of breath. But you did make that a bit simpler for me today, and I do appreciate that.
Not a problem. The table is pretty much as it was. Top of the pile, Will Norris remains with 11 clean sheets in 21. One below him on 10 in 21 is Nicholas Bialo-Kapic. Alex Palmer with 10 in 22. Then Alex Bass has crept in, 9 on 21. And Ben Hinchliffe also in there, 9 in 22. We'll just finish quickly with a keeper caper.
Bada boom, bada bing. It's only a keeper caper.
This was from the Liga MX final in Mexico. So the first leg ended one apiece between Tigres and Club America. It was 0-0 after full time. Into extra time, Tigres were already down to 10 men. Club America has scored early in extra time, which prompted absolute madness and Tigres goalkeeper Nahuel Guzman to be dismissed in the 95th minute. So the sending off alone was quite funny in the fact that he was miles out of his goal and has just dragged the onrushing attacker down. But he decides to not leave the stadium, Guzman, and he hides behind the goal, actually hides behind the goal under some tarpaulin like a naughty schoolboy. Just unbelievable to watch this.
Yeah, and you could just see the eyes peering out. I was curious to know, because I don't know what happened thereafter. Did anyone notice that he was under that? Was he just able to... No? No idea. But no, I thought it was... Yeah, of course, look, the rules, as I understand them, when you get sent off, I was only ever sent off once, but... Yeah, you're not able to obviously come back to the touchline or anything like that. I think, you know, from memory, when I was sent off, I just stayed in the changing room until full time. But yeah, look, this might be the way forward. If you can find a sneaky little spot and hide somewhere, a little bunker, watch the game, ideal.
Yeah, I haven't seen the footage of what... I've seen the footage of him remonstrating, the sending off, him remonstrating, but then just seeing him under the tarp. So there's no in-between. I don't know how he got there. I don't know how he managed to crawl under it. I don't know how he thought that he wouldn't be seen. Although the fact there is no footage, maybe he did somehow make it there without anybody seeing him. He's quite a funny character, isn't he? He's done some penalty stuff in the past. I think he did a magic trick at one point to put off a penalty taker. He's done some weird, like, miming antics before as well. So quite the character, as you'd expect from a goalkeeper. And just to finish, Richard, we had an email in from Cassie Gooding, who says, "Hey y'all," which I love the fact that we're being referred to as y'all.
I'll take that. I'm assuming this is from America or not?
I'm going to guess so. Yeah, I'm going to guess. I can't imagine anyone here would speak like that. So, "Hey y'all, I don't know if y'all have been following the women's side since the World Cup ended, but this is an interesting story. Knight didn't think to print goalkeeper kits in advance, and since finally doing so, they've flown off the shelves." She is, of course, referring to Mary Earps, who has recently been talking about how she thought she was repping a small niche group, but support is much broader than she expected. So the England goalkeeper kit, the women's England, the Lionesses England goalkeeper shirts, have flown off the shelves for a second time for Nike, and Mary Earps has just been speaking about that. So really, I was thinking about this. It's been quite a good exercise, not just for Mary Earps and the fact that those goalkeeper kits have been available, but Nike, the scoundrels, have probably benefited from all this, haven't they? Because it's good publicity. So instantly, more people, you'd imagine, have gone to get the kits.
Yeah, it's a bit of a, "I'll show you, I'll buy one."
So, cheers. I'll show,
there you go. You must feel like such an idiot now. No, look, do you know, look, rightly so. I mean, I know it was a big thing at the time, and it was crazy that they didn't have the shirts, her shirt out. So, you know, quite rightly that she made that point. And I'm glad that this has now happened, because then you'd like to think moving forward, that will mean that things, again, are moving forward in the right direction. But you are bang on. They probably ended up selling even more shirts on the back of them not releasing it in the first place. So it's kind of a weird, I'm really happy about it, but at the same time, yeah, it's benefited the wrong person almost.
Absolutely. Okay, Richard, that's us. We are 10 days or so before the January window kicks off. A busy week for you?
Yeah, it will be. I kind of find that this week tends to be very busy, because then the week between Christmas and New Year, it's still going to be busy leading up to the January window, but it's always a bit of a funny week for everyone, isn't it? With obviously Christmas Day, Boxing Day, etc. So I expect this week to be very busy. We'll start to get a bit more of a feel as to who's going where in the January market. And then I guess for us, we won't be doing Boxing Day. I'm guessing it'll be the day after, 27th or 28th, I would assume, for our next pod.
Yeah, we'll have to look at that. We'll have to look at the fixtures, actually, as to how we plan the next couple of weeks, which I should have done already. But yes, thank you for reminding me of that.
You are more than welcome.
Richard, thank you.
Matthew, thank you.
This has been the Goalkeepers Union podcast, Between the Sticks, Keepers.
Wait!